you present here with what quite a longish agenda before us, although it contains only about two items, but they are quite involved. Let me welcome the portfolio committee members from the public enterprises, as well as the Department of Public Enterprises. I want to check with you, DDG, that you are going to make the presentation, whether your documents are ready. I don't see them in front of me. So that if you are not yet ready, then we can, might as well start with PASA. I don't know whose presentation is loaded on the computer here. Who's loaded here? Is it PASA?
I'm connected.
You connected. Public Enterprises, are you ready? We don't see your documents, but just give us an indication so that we can then start with PASA so long and move on. Over.
Thank you, Chair. Morning to members. Apologies, Chair. Our presentation is not yet loaded on the computer, and understand from our office the copies will be distributed shortly. So my suggestion would be to take the cue from you, Chair, that you can continue with PASA so that we don't delay the meeting.
All right. Thank you very much. That being cleared, let's then hand over to the next presenters until the Public Enterprises is ready. With PASA, we are going to be dealing with you in two stages. One is to listen to your annual report that we're supposed to have dealt with in a particular day, but then unfortunately could not do so. After that, you just simultaneously give us your strategic plan, and we'll engage with both of them at the same time. DG, please introduce your team and take us through. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I come here today as the Chairperson, Acting Chairperson of Petroleum Agency. And we have a team, management team of the Petroleum Agency. I will ask them to introduce themselves. The CEO here.
Okay,
Mthosa
Mixiku, the Chief Executive Officer.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Olivia Munt, the CFO at Petroleum Agency.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Marrett, manager in the promotion division.
Good morning. I'm David van der Spey, also a manager in the promotion division.
Good morning. I'm Zuki van der Beek, the general manager promotion.
Good morning. For Lundstorm, information services manager.
Morning, members. My name is Pumla Ngesi, manager, regulation division.
Lizwe Mekwe, general manager, regulation division.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. We would like to thank you for the opportunity which you gave us to present to you our annual report of 2010-11 and our work plans for 2012-13 financial year. The mandate of the Petroleum Agency, which is currently a subsidiary of Central Energy Fund, is derived from the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. The Act mandates the agency to regulate and promote the upstream oil and gas sector of South Africa. The regulation and promotion activities are therefore undertaken in respect of both onshore and offshore areas of South Africa. As you might be aware, while there are selected opportunities, the country is less endowed in oil and gas when compared to the solid mineral sector. This therefore poses a major challenge in terms of attracting oil and gas exploration companies to the country, and this requires a concerted approach from the agency in respect of continued promotion of the country's upstream petroleum sector. In the development of its annual strategy and plans, the agency takes cognizance of this and many relevant other external and internal challenges. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, the CEO, Mr. Bipu, will take you through the presentation.
Over to you, CEO.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. Chairperson, thank you very much again for this opportunity to make these two presentations to this portfolio committee. Perhaps can I start by getting an indication of how much time we've got, Chairperson, so that I know how to pace myself?
You are unfortunately have very little time. We are expecting you to deal with both presentations within 30 minutes, and we will then engage thereafter. So
yes.
If you had prepared somewhat longer presentation, you would have to summarize it.
I will do. Thank you once again, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will give you the high level report for 2010 to 11. I apologize. What appears on the screen is 2010. There's a slash there that is hidden slash 11. Okay, the logo has hidden it. And then we are happy to have any questions. The full management team is here to answer any questions you might have. Chairperson, this is in this financial year, we did our planning in terms of what is called a balanced scorecard, which yielded quite a number of objectives in that year, all 25 of them. But I've made copies of all of them, and we can take questions on each and every one of them. But what I will do is, for this report, I will focus on the notes that I have attached to those objectives and the performance. In this particular year, 2010 to 11, we had extensive promotional activity by the country. We broadened our focus to include the Far East. As you might know, most of these of the promotional activities take place in the United Kingdom and the United States, but we saw it necessary to go to the Far East. We went and made presentations to China, and were received quite well by the big companies in China, countries like Sinopec. And we raised our profile as prodded by our board with our local stakeholders as well, making presentations, not only in Parliament, but also in local magazines, so that we can get the attention of aspiring BEE actors who could also act in this field. And we have had a number, especially on the onshore. And those were well received, and we've had a number of applications, especially. We still have very few offshore because of the costs of operations offshore. The technical progress that we have made is that we have to date. I will show you a map later on of the current state of activity in the country. To show you just how much success we have had in our different basins, the Orange Basin, the Southern Central Karoo Basin, the Springbok Flats. And as you know, up north we've got great interest in coal bed methane, and further south we've got the Karoo Basin, known for the potential of shale gas. So we had increased interest in unconventional oil and gas onshore, which has then led us to put a lot of emphasis on capacity building, because as soon as these activities take off, the Petroleum Agency, with the little staff that we have, stands vulnerable to poaching by the external companies that come in. So we focused on capacity building internally. I will talk later about the Upstream Training Trust, where we try to build capacity generally in the country. Chairperson, in this year, we also made a presentation to the plenary session of the United Nations Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf. This is in respect of the submission that we had made the year before. The presentation was very well received, and South Africa was commended for the presentation that we made. Please do remember, nevertheless, that the actual assessment of our submission will be made by a subcommittee to be appointed by the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf, which we hope should be in the next 2 to 4 years, either in 2014 and at the latest in 2016. But I can confirm that our presentation, together with DIRCO, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, was very well received. Licensing and regulation, Chairperson, we have continued without any real problems. All our applications, licensing applications, were conducted within the legislated timeframes, which is one of our objectives, because we cannot have objectives outside of the timeframes. So that went well in that year, and the agency continues to monitor and enforce compliance with legislation, particularly environmental compliance. This is going to be very important going forward, Chairperson, as the country is filling up both onshore and offshore with exploration activities. The capacity to monitor and enforce compliance is going to be absolutely crucial. Well, needless to mention, there was continued interest in shale gas in that particular financial year. We had before the end of that financial year, on the 1st of February, a moratorium that was gazetted on all new applications, which was further reinforced by Cabinet to say that even those applications that had been received could not be finalized pending a pronouncement on this by the Minister and Cabinet, depending on the input they would be getting from a study to be conducted by the task team that was appointed in 2011. Perhaps just to stress that the agency has stressed its determination to remain objective in order to carry out its mandate successfully. The Petroleum Agency, as you might know, is not only the promoter and regulator of oil and gas exploration, but for all oil and gas exploration activities, we are also the data management center. And in this regard, we have managed the data. We've been able to supply all the actors within their agreed time frames. When I come to the later years, you will see that there has been increased requests for the data that we hold, because that is where the companies are able to determine the potential of the country, the potential prospectivity of South Africa as an oil and gas province. So there's been a lot of requests from big international players for our data. On the corporate social responsibility front, Chairperson, quite in line with the intent of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, we try to have 5 internships at all times in order to nurture capacity in the engineering, in the geology and geophysics fields, so that we can have a pool within the country and not have to import people when these activities take off. There is a scarcity of these fields in the country, and we're doing our best in collaboration with the operators to ensure that there is training in the country. Together with the operators, we run what is called the Upstream Training Trust, where we give bursaries to students to get training in the natural sciences with specific focus on geology, the geosciences, and engineering fields relating to what we do. We had a number of projects that we got involved with: the University of Forte Petroleum Studies Unit, Habitat for Humanity, Learners Focus Week, Science Kits for schools. Our Upstream Training Trust was also approached by the World Petroleum Congress chapter, South African chapter, the South African National Committee, to select and manage a special scholarship that is a legacy of the World Petroleum Congress that was held in South Africa in 2005. We have students that are recipients of that scholarship, that prestigious scholarship of the World Petroleum Congress, the chapter of South Africa. Also, the focus in this regard is in the GMG sciences. Can I just pause for a minute and give over to the CFO to present on the financial performance in that financial year?
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm just very briefly going to go through the financial performance for the 2010-11 financial year. The first is our statement of comprehensive income, basically the income statement of the agency. And despite implementation of the Royalty Act in March 2010, the agency continued to receive income on unconverted old order rights as provided for in the Royalty Act. And so our income for the year was significantly higher than what we anticipated it to be. Included in our operating expenses of 84.5 million rand in that financial year, we had to make a provision for 13 million rand, which was a provision for doubtful debts due to the fact that we had funded, as the agency, 13 million on the Extended Continental Shelf Claim Project, and CEF, who were funding that to that stage, had not approved additional funding for us, and we had therefore to provide 13 million for that. Subsequent to that, the CEF board has approved the continued funding of that project, and in 2012 we have actually physically received the monies that we got, and we've reversed that provision. So if you take that 13 million out of that 84.5 million rand operating expenses, you'll see that our operating expenses for the year 2011 were almost flat, in line with the 2010 expenditure. This is obviously a great achievement in the inflationary kind of environment that we operate, and this was due to significant energies within the agency to curb costs. Our investment income of 16.4 million is on our cash reserves that we currently have, and as you can see, we have a profit in line with the 2010 profit of 7 million rand.
On the balance sheet, you can see that our financial position actually improved during the year by 13 million rand. We have a slightly stronger balance sheet than what we had at the 31st of March 2010. And then the statement of cash flows is the important one. As you can see, our cash flows actually did reduce over that financial year. The reason for that was that late in the financial year, we identified an error in the calculation of our income, which resulted in additional income being raised in March of 50 million rand. That money was received earlier in the new financial year, and therefore we did slightly dip into our cash flows as at the end of the 2011 financial year, but that money was recovered during the early portion of the 2012 financial year. Just in summary, we had an unqualified audit report. We continued to receive our income, which was 70 million rand from the unconverted old orders rights. And then our operational costs remained consistent. So I think all in all for the agency, it was a relatively good year, which was significantly better than what we had anticipated. And so that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Of the annual report, and then we could maybe move on to the 2012-13 plan, if you are or you like to take questions at once.
Okay, Chairperson. Just before I go to the 20 plans, I promised to show you a map of the country and just a visual of the activity to date. This is a map of South Africa, and as you can see, that is our border there with Namibia, and on this side is our border with Mozambique, maritime border, and just about everywhere. There's very little space right now on the coast of South Africa, starting with Petro SA right up at our border with Namibia, right down our blocks down to Petro SA. Even Total has come into the country, and a number of smaller players like Sungu Sungu and so on have taken up acreage, Impact Oil, and that Silver Wave of Singapore. This is Sasol here. It's right around Silver Wave of Singapore. So this is our coastline. The browns, they are not very clear. The browns indicate applications, and the greens, those are supposed to be greens, they indicate granted and licensed permits and rights. Of course, in this area, this is the Karoo Basin, and this is the Southern Karoo Basin, with the potential for shale gas. Remaining in brown is those applications, as I will not necessarily delve into that right now, but those are the applications for shale gas exploration. So this is the picture that you see up in the north. There is mostly coal-bed methane prospects. We have received a couple of applications for production rights, and we're quite excited about that. So we'll be getting production soon, in addition to the production rights that has been granted to the Petro SA forest oil anschutz for the Ibubesi gas field. So this is what the country looks like from an oil and gas exploration and production perspective. Let me now go to the report. To the plans for 2000 and slideshow. Okay. Right. Just to repeat, our strategic role, Chairperson, and mandate of the Petroleum Agency is to contribute to the energy resources of the country by promoting and regulating the exploration and production of the country's natural oil and gas resources. The functions, which I will not repeat, are as set out in Section 71 of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. This is, you don't have this page, it's just a busy page indicating the balanced scorecard that we're working against, but as the pages will go, this is what our corporate objectives are determined from. As I said, to promote, facilitate, and regulate the exploration and sustainable development of oil and gas for the benefit of all South Africans remains our mission. The first line indicates who our stakeholders are, and our stakeholders are the government itself, our explorers, that is the operators that we attract. As a company, we've got internal stakeholders, and the populace of the country is one of our important stakeholders. If you can think, for example, of environmental management, we're fully accountable to the citizens of the country. So those we have identified in our strategic planning as our stakeholders. And the pillars of our activity are indicated in this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those are the pillars of what we do, the main objectives, which are to evaluate resources and promote opportunities, to regulate upstream petroleum, the upstream petroleum industry, three, to preserve the preservation of and access to geotechnical upstream petroleum information. This is our data management function. And to contribute to the shale gas exploration strategy, in support, obviously, of the Department of Mineral Resources. And number five, to ensure optimal human resource provisioning. And number six, to ensure optimal financial management. So as we go along, I will break this down. Okay, this is what I've just read out. That is the first page that you have, evaluate resources and promote opportunities, and so on. You've got this page. Okay, on the evaluation of resources and the promotion of opportunities, Chairperson, we will document the geology and petroleum prospectivity of five basins. This will now be year three of a multi-year program. We have set ourselves out on a 5-year program. We have set out documented milestones that we judge ourselves against, which are fully audited each year that we pass. We will update the petroleum resource inventory. Just to emphasize that, although we call this our promotion division, this is where most of our geoscientists are, and the main responsibility is to do the resource evaluation of both of our shores and also the frontier, which is why we've got frontier geology, the frontier that has not been investigated and researched to date. We will promote the South African prospectivity through the relevant media and events, and last but not least, we will prepare for the defense of the continental shelf claim. You must remember that we've made the presentations. Now we are preparing ourselves for the defense, and further to that, we are also preparing an addendum which will go up the Discovery Ridge. I'll show you a map. This is the Discovery Ridge that we're preparing as an addendum to the presentations we've already made to the United Nations. You will recall this map from the presentations we've made in the past. These are the areas. This is an indication of the claims that we are making beyond the 200 nautical mile limit. And of course, the claims also affect our Prince Edward Islands, because that is South Africa, and the red there is the 200 nautical mile limit. But this claim enables us to claim beyond that, up to 350 nautical miles. So that is what we will be going to defend. And as we have presented in the past, our success in this would mean additional territory to the country of another third of what we, in fact, plus 50% of what we have, if you count the onshore and the offshore. Okay, but we look forward to those defenses at the United Nations. Regulation, we will ensure that TAMIA's processing of application continues undisturbed, ensure compliance with terms and conditions of permits and rights. As you see, that hard map that I showed you, the country is getting busy, so the monitoring of compliance becomes extremely important. With the prospects that we have of applications that are still pending at the moment, there's going to be a lot of this that is going to be of great essence to our activities. We will also ensure the transformation in the upstream industry. We've got predetermined targets for that, as guided by the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. We will ensure the preservation of and access to geotechnical upstream petroleum information. This is our data management activity again. And we must and we have to provide quality geotechnical information, and it must be within time frames. We must provide access to metadata via internet. This day and age, we must ensure the TAMIA's access to data. So we'll be using internet for this purpose. And we will continue to identify and obtain available legacy data. Internally, we will ensure optimal human resource provisioning. This is coordinating a skills. What's going to be important for us going forward is doing a skills needs assessment and development of a human resources plan. Again, I go back to the map and say the map with the prospects that we have require us to be properly staffed and structured to have the necessary human resources. So that in this financial year, we'll be doing a skills needs assessment so that we can see what gaps do we have within the petroleum agency. Ensure optimal financial management. Chairperson, this is of critical importance to us. First of all, starting with efficient management of our own resources, but also interacting with our principals for the funding of the Petroleum Agency. The MPRDA, as you know, provides for funding through the fiscal, so that is not a problem. It's already legislated that we will be funded by the fiscal, and at the moment we are going through a transitional phase from where we were self-funding from the royalties to funding through the fiscal. But I can reassure you again, the Petroleum Agency, with the reserves that it was allowed to retain, will be able to sustain itself for another 3 years, starting with this financial year, during this transitional period. We will also, as we have said, we have decided to set this aside as a separate objective, contribute to shale gas exploration strategy. This entails a lot of activity, which includes working with the department in the task team, strategizing ourselves and positioning ourselves to do the necessary regulation of this activity, empowering ourselves to have the correct resources, physical, human, financial resources, to be able to meet with this challenge. But it also means for us, with the scientists that we have, ensuring and looking at the actual resource potential, because all the figures that you've had up to now are speculative, are speculation. So all of that is important for the Petroleum Agency. At this point, can I give over to Olivia, Chief Financial Officer?
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm just very briefly going to explain the financial plans for the upcoming financial year. As you can see, it's very, very evident that our financial position is going to significantly, and our mode of operation is going to significantly change in terms of our 2013 budget. We anticipate that the income that we're currently receiving from the old order permits and rights will terminate shortly with the conversion in terms of the MPRDA.
We also had an incredibly, incredibly strong year in 2012 with respect to data. As you can see, the forecast figures are the forecast as we provided at the time of submitting our corporate plan. In fact, we have done even better in 2012. In fact, we are looking at a significantly higher profit than that in our 2012 forecast, but we anticipate that the income we receive from data is not something that will continue into the future at the rate that we received at the current financial year. We don't anticipate any income from permits or licenses. And our forecast income is going to drop significantly for the year. Our total income budgeted is only 8.5 million rand. Our personnel costs are 57.5 million rand, incorporate a 6% budgeted increase on personnel costs. And the balance of the increase actually comes from two things. In 2012, we had quite a number of relatively high order positions that were vacant, which we budgeted to fill in the current financial year. But our organogram, our approved organogram, hasn't changed at all from what it was in 2012. We just want to do that. The other thing included in that personnel cost is the related personnel costs around training and development, with our continued focus on building capacity under shale gas, as mentioned by the CEO. Our travel costs are budgeted to increase slightly, and our other costs there that have increased there significantly, the big number that's included in that 28.9 million is an increase in rentals for space to store our core and everything like that because of the increased interest and activity as identified by it through the CEO. So we are budgeting a net operating loss for the year of 85 million rand. We will continue to receive income on our interest on our cash reserves, and so our budgeted loss for the year is 69 million rand, and that will be funded from our cash reserves. If we then look at the cash position for the year, as you can see, we've spoken to the operating costs and the interest. The cash flow from the investing activities is the budget of 7.2 million rand for capital expenditure. The only significant capital expenditure item which we show in our budget is for computer equipment and software, which is utilized for the ongoing maintenance of our data and the provision of this data in a most efficient manner to potential investors in the country. So we have an anticipated opening cash balance of 275 million, and our decrease in cash for the year is 65 million. So we show that we will have cash reserves of just over 200 million at the end of the year. In terms of the provision in the MPRDA for funding from the fiscus, we anticipate that we will bring that into place from the 2015 financial year. We've given ourselves the 2013 budget year as well as the 2014 year to resolve all the issues, and we're hoping that by the time we get to the 2015 year, we will begin to receive some sort of fiscal funding from fiscus in terms of the provisioning of in the MPRDA. That's all I have to say. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. This brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Members, that's then PASA. I hope that in dealing with both the annual report as well as the strategic plan, which we will have to juggle in between, we are not going to spend the entirety of our time on matters pertaining to shale gas. I know it's quite an interesting subject, but in the past we have devoted quite a lot of time to those to that subject matter. I'm hoping that yes, we'll ask questions around it, but it will not be the only item that will be discussed in the meeting. It's over to you. Let's thank PASA for the presentation. Over to you, Honorable Members, for your questions, your engagement, and yes. It's open. Honorable Ngele, Honorable Lorima, those are the two for now. Honorable Bigani, Honorable Khululu, in that light, please. Honorable Ngele, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. It's just one minor question. I'm sure by now used to be DG, but now acting chair knows that I can't let it pass. The corporate social responsibilities. But before that, you mentioned something that you said you would be coming back to it, and you never did. And I'm most interested in it. That is training for the skills. I don't know which skills, the rest skills that is. So in corporate social, I didn't really get you where you get these students from and what happens to them after they have, if ever they qualify, after they have qualified. Where do you get them? How do you find them? How do you advocate for them? Is it by maybe media, radios, whatever? And bear in mind, Fort Hay is in a rural area. I'm interested in rural students. What happens to them? Do you sometimes get them, or you get the urbanized students? That's my question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lorima.
A couple of questions. Firstly, I'm interested in your activities in monitoring environmental compliance and how these mesh with other departments, particularly Department of the Environment. And really, I think the question is, are you confident that you have sufficient capacity to monitor environmental compliance, particularly as the gas extraction industry advances? Also on that, are you confident that the current legislation will provide adequate safeguards for new processes that we're likely to see in the prospecting and exploitation of shale gas? Moving on to coal bed methane, I'd like to hear a bit more about that, an assessment of our coal bed methane potential, and if we're going to see production, when will that be, how much will that be? The demands for the evaluation of our gas resources, are you able to keep up with those? Specifically, I'd like to know if you've got any kind of estimate of what our shale gas resource might be, and is the agency going to be responsible for assessing that potential, or is that going to, does that depend on exploration by commercial companies? And just to finish off with the Continental Shelf claim, can you assess the likelihood of opposition to our claim? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Chair. I just have one question concerning the finances. From the explanation that you've been giving us, it looks like you're working on a downslope, because you presently keep on talking about utilizing your reserves. But what do you have as a major plan to try and augment the fact that you seem to be planning, having a bigger picture than your present financial status? What is the strategy in place, or what is the plan in place from Petro SA to say, should we get into a crisis? Because I don't figure out how you're going to continue making use of bigger projects or implementing bigger projects if you are continuously having a downslope when it comes to your reserve. Or do you have an assuring plan in place to say you have certainty that perhaps from your entities you are going to get improved funding? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khululu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the agency for the presentation. I've got only one clarity seeking question, Chair, regarding the Prince Edward claims. I just wanted to know more about it as to what are the minerals that are existing in that island, and if you could just explain a little bit more about them, because I think it's my first time to hear about this Prince Edward Island. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think those are the questions that if you could please respond to, but in addition to the questions that have been asked, is that one, we are faced with, as a country, with a dilemma where, can you put this thing off, or you put a paper just in front of it? Where there is sustained increase on our energy costs. In this instance, just last night, 12 midnight, petrol price has gone up. And the analysts, as well as some government spokespersons, blame that on the price of the crude oil and the scarcity thereof. Now, with the map you have shown us, if you can put it up once more, because you've browsed through it correctly, so especially when you spoke about possibilities of production, which seem to be accounting for a fraction of what is in there. In the main, it's exploration by those private companies, your Sasol, your Shell, and other companies. But then production, if I heard you correctly, you were saying it's those greenish areas, if I'm correct. Now, what are the prospects of us getting any form of crude oil that could mitigate the current situation that the country is faced with? So that at some point we get out of this situation where we are heavily dependent on imports from other countries, more so with the changing political landscape in the world. For instance, there are these sanctions that are applied by our major trading partner, the United States, against Iran, and in a way extending those sanctions to all countries that the United States is doing business with. And now we begin to look inwardly, in a sense that we begin to explore in Africa in terms of what is available. And then the deputy president was in Ghana to try and secure the supply of oil to the country. But the ultimate position that we would want to be is that of self-sustaining supply. I know that it will take quite some time before we could say that we basically are able to produce our own oil, given the attempts that were made in your Saldanha Bay projects, and well, of course, in terms of gas in Moscow. Now, that's the first question. Because the likelihood is that the populace of the country are already feeling the impact of the price increase. And we don't want to wait until such time that there are problems that would be emanating from that kind of an experience by the population of the country. That's the first question. The second question would relate to, I think, what Honorable Lorimer has raised about the potential of our gas supply. We know that currently we are importing gas. Can't remember this country. Whether is it Venezuela or is it, but it's one of the countries that we have got trade links with, where we are exploring possibilities of importing gas, and to an extent, sort of building a pipeline from that particular country. I'll remember it right now. Indeed, we need to be sure of our supply. And as you correctly pointed out, that you have factored in the gas into the energy mix of the country. The last question would be on your financials. I think other questions have been asked in relation to that. But your auditor's report, I've been looking at your annual report. I can't come across your auditor's report here. We'll take your word that you did receive an unqualified audit, but then to check whether the auditor was entirely happy, were there no areas, issues of and matters of emphasis that the auditor has raised with yourselves? We don't know that, because I've been browsing your annual report and I cannot come across a... here we are. Sorry. Yes. Indeed, these matters of emphasis have been raised on point 8, point 9, point 10, 11, 12. Did you address these issues that the Auditor General has raised? And if so, have you got an action plan that talks to those issues that the Auditor General has raised in his audit report? Yes, we are happy with the fact that you have been given an unqualified audit report, but then there are these emphasis of matters that have been raised by the Auditor General in terms of those issues reflected in those points that I've raised. Thank you. Over to you. Please respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The first issue was raised by Honorable Ngere in respect to corporate social responsibilities. Tazan, will you address it?
Yes.
That is, where do we get the students who we sponsor? Where are they? Are they from rural areas? You know, do we advertise? How do we manage the whole program? We must touch the two programs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you again, Mamungele. The total number of bursaries we have and hold in each year is in the region of 25 bursaries. We, as you can understand, we are a regulatory agency. We are not, you know, one of the big companies that are able to fund more students. Now, the context of that is that it becomes difficult for us to have massive advertisements for the applicants that we have, because we would be inundated with thousands of applications with the need that really is out there. And so we do not advertise in any of the big platforms. What we do is to interact. We interact with the universities. A lot of our students, in fact, we pick up because we interact with the Department of Mineral Resources on the one hand and with the Department of Energy on the other, as we go to Energy Weeks, to Careers Days, and events of that nature. So we always go out there, and also the Science Weeks, we're always out there to educate students, especially the upcoming high school students, about geology. You know, a lot of us never knew geology, you know, until we were at university, others until we left university, and to realize the importance and strategic importance, national importance of geology and geoscience. So what we do is to try to educate the youngsters. Now, that's where we pick up these students at the moment. We try not to advertise. our bathroom, so you will not pick up the Sunday Times and see an advert. That's how we pick them up. And yes, we've got a focus on the rural area, because I also mentioned that we have things like science kits that we have. On the programs that we fund, science kits, science days. Now, yes, we do reach out to the rural areas. Recently, I went to Nkungumate, which is very close to Nkanja, and we were there addressing students, and we made a donation of science kits. So we, as much as we can, our focus is on the previously disadvantaged, and especially in the rural areas. So that's how we get our students. Unfortunately, we do not advertise. And we've been able to attract quite a lot of students in that manner for the few that we have. And they've made good use. We've had very good results, but again, because we are restricted in our funding, we offer in the region of 45,000, which is just enough. So we also lose. Your question was, where are the students? What happens to them? I'd say at least 25% of them, because they are so good and we've been able to bring them out, they then get attracted. The bigger companies will take them up. I think just last month we lost, was it two or three of our attempts to Petro SA. They've been taken up as interns and offered internship positions by Petro SA. So the bigger companies will always take them, but will always attract, you know, as much as we can. We do not keep a tab and record of where they are at this point, because we just want to introduce them into the market. So some of them, unfortunately, some of them will even leave the country. Some of them we've been able to retain even within the petroleum agency. But others are in the market. They are at Tallow Oil, they are at Petro SA, they are at, you know, some of our graduates. But we're happy that we're, you know, there are a number of people that we've trained through this program, and also through our own internal internship program. We take students who have just graduated, and take them through a 2 to 3 year intensive internship program, mainly focusing in the geosciences. It's not exclusive, but the bulk of the students we take will be in the geosciences, so that they get sufficient training. And thereafter, we do not have a contract that they shall remain with us. If there is a position, we will retain them if they apply successfully. But if there isn't, we allow them to go to Tallow, Petro SA, Sasol, wherever they can. So that is the situation. But we are quite happy that we've been able to attract and train our students from the previously disadvantaged areas of our population.
Chair, follow up comment, please. Acting Chair, being generous. Last week when we took almost the same subject with health and safety, but Mr. Msiza, I was told that you have been to somewhere in KwaZulu-Natal, and even here now, you have visited a no-no.
Thank you. Point noted. I think it's just coincidental, but I can tell you what they do is they move from province to province. This science week they'll move in different provinces, and then the Department of Mineral Resources also move from province to province. Northwest, they go there, Eastern Cape. At some point I was with them in Eastern Cape. They move around. I'm sure
we certainly do, Chairperson. And as I did mention, we've had a project with the University of Fort Hare where we've encouraged them to have a chair for the geosciences, and we continue to act with them. We have previously even had, we don't have the program at the moment, but we've had one of our senior managers going there occasionally to give lectures to the geology students of the University of Fort Hare. And of course, even in the outskirts, you know, some of our science kits and some of our science projects and science buses have been in some of the rural areas, even of the Western Cape, because we do have rural areas, even in areas like the Western Cape. So we've been all over, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, yes, we have.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question relates to, is from Honorable Loma, on environmental issues, whether we have capacity to deal with environmental issues, given the current legislation to handle it.
Yes, Chairperson, with regard to environmental compliance from Honorable Lorimer, we certainly do cooperate with the Department of Environmental Affairs. In fact, the DG says, I can mention it, that the Department of Mineral Resources has got very good cooperation with the Department of Environmental Affairs. And with regard to the shale gas issue, we have established a very good relationship, not only with the Department of Environmental Affairs, but the Department of Water Affairs, the Department of Science and Technology, and with other state organs like the Council for Geoscience. So we're working quite closely together. So that if and when, depending on what the government position shall be, if and when that happens, it's not even a matter of contacting and consulting with them. We hope to have a stronger working relationship in considering the applications that we'll get. So yes, there is strong cooperation. I will though honestly say that as the petroleum agency, to the question of whether we've got capacity at this point to deal with that deluge of work that will come, we cannot. I mean, it's a chicken and egg situation. We are positioned right now to handle what we have in the country right now. And we are obviously interacting with the department, with our board, with government, to plan. We've started to plan for the future, because even apart from shale gas, as the map shows that I showed you, there's a lot of activity that is now coming. We are past the largely applications phase and moving into operations phase, which require a lot of monitoring from different aspects, from the technical aspects to the agreements that people have signed to, and obviously to the environmental management that has been agreed to. So the petroleum agency must grow, must meet those demands. But these are presentations we have to agree with our chairperson in his other hat.
Thank you. And also on the issue of evaluation of shale resources, whether to be done by private sector or government, or maybe I think it's a combination of both. Each party has got its own role. We can't expect the PASA to go out and drill the whole country, is what I'm saying. But they have got their role in terms of the mandate as captured in the MPRDA, for instance, the whole issue of gathering information, putting information together, undertaking specific targeted research together with other institutions such as the Council for Geoscience. Okay? And this is the main aim, is to attract investment. Once people start to see that we have put quality information on the table, they get attracted. And I think that's the role of government throughout. Throughout the world. So the role of PASA there to be mainly to gather information, put it together, and ensure that people are aware of that information. Private sector will also have its own role in terms of exploration, because as you know that you will need lots of funds to trade. So this is basically a combination of both. Okay. The other one came from Honorable Bigani with regards to finances of the organization, that there's a downward slope which has been shown there. I will ask the CEO to comment on that. But the whole thing is we are in a transitional environment as far as all the time the organization used to receive funding through royalties. Okay? But with the implementation of the Royalty Act, the situation has now changed, and I'll ask the CEO to address that.
Thank you again, Chairperson. I think it's important to to emphasize, as my chairperson has said, that the downward slope is not out of failure or lack of success by the petroleum agency. It's by operation of law. In fact, it's not even supposed to be a downward slope. It's supposed to be a zero slope, because we are not supposed to be getting any funding from the operators, because the as of the 1st of March 2010, the Royalties Act determined that royalties shall now be payable to the Treasury and no longer to the Petroleum Agency. And in terms of the MPRDA, Section 72.1 prescribes that the designated agency shall be funded by Parliament. So we're not supposed to be getting it. That we are still able to get any funding from the operators is more of a windfall than anything else. We are not supposed to. It's because they are unconverted rights, which are now converted as of the end of the last financial year, and as a result we will not be getting any. Now, why we are able to continue finding ourselves was the specific provision in the establishment directives of the petroleum agency that foresaw that there would be times where royalties would dry up, but that agency must continue to be able to operate and fund itself, where, for example, there's no royalty receivable from the Petro SAs, the Pioneers, the companies that were producing it at the time. So there was provision that there would be reserves to serve exactly this purpose, that where there is no funding receivable, the petroleum agency, nevertheless, as a state company, is able to operate without disturbance. So that is why we are saying we are able to operate without disturbance at this point for the next three financial years. So that is the context of the downward slope. The what we are working on right now, as the DG has said, is the departments are engaging with the Treasury so that we do not get to a point of exhausting our reserves before the issues are resolved. So those issues are being attended to, and they will, and as soon as they are resolved, then we get our funding as prescribed by the MPRDA from the fiscal.
Other issue from Honorable Khololo is with regards to Prince Edward. What are the minerals there? Who will handle it? Ziki will handle it.
I think what one has to explain originally is that the Continental Shelf Claim Project extends the Continental Shelf into previously unexplored areas. Much a frontier area. So if one's looking for minerals on Prince Edward Island, there aren't any. But what we're saying is this is a project for the future as exploration technologies improve. So the frontier of what you can exploit increases. Currently, there is what is of interest is pharmaceutical research. So associated with the ridges, there is release of very rich, hot thermal waters, and these are associated with the condensation, the accumulation of pharmaceuticals, and this is where a lot of interest is being focused at present, and also with deposits of rare earths. So there's a potential for things like gold and that kind of mineralization. Whether one can exploit it commercially, because it's at great depth, is something else. But what is of interest is just outside the area that we are planning to claim at the Discovery Ridge, in the high seas, as it is. China has just put in, I think it's 11 exploration right applications with the International Seabed Authority. So it's not off the radar, and there are people interested. At present, we have nothing that we could say there is a definite reserve.
If I may add, I think this is a challenge for the country, because if you look at the situation in South Africa now, we have relatively explored the onshore area of the county. We have really documented it. We understand the geology. There's still much which can be still be done, but we have really done a good job when it comes to that. But when it comes to the sea floor, we are still far. Big challenge for the country. Other countries like I think India, they have started to look at their sea floor. So we have to start to look at mapping our sea floor. And there are potential in terms of minerals there. As she stated, the gold could be found there, manganese is also there, but it will need a lot of scientific research which has got to be put in place by the country. Given handle potential for oil and gas.
Thank you, Chair. Our own evaluation of the prospectivity of South Africa is that closer to the shelf or closer to the coast, that area we think has got more gas prospectivity than oil prospectivity. And in the deeper areas here, where companies like can you see that pointer? Yes. In the deeper areas here, we think there is potential for oil. But as in any exploration, especially in oil exploration, you can never know until you have drilled. And even when you have drilled one well, is not going to tell you what's there. You've got to drill several wells to be able to know how much you've got and whether it will actually flow. But we think potential, we've got a potential of billions of barrels of oil in the deeper shore. And that goes also not only for the Orange Basin, which is on the western coast, also for this area here, which is currently being explored by Canadian National Resources. So we've got both gas next to on the shallower areas, and on the deeper areas, we expect to get more oil when exploration comes on board. Production comes. There was also a question on the potential for CBM from Honorable Lorimer, and hope you can see the pointer. The Anglo has been working on the Waterberg Basin, coal fields of the Lephalale Basin, and they have estimated that we have 1 TCF of reserves. For those people who are not familiar with the units that we use, 1 TCF is what Mosgas was floated on. Our own investigations of another basin, which is this one, the Springbok Flats Basin, suggest that we can have as much as 5 TCF of gas in place. Again, that can only be verified by more exploration to test whether the gas that is there will flow. So if you have 5 TCF in gas, of gas in place, you can expect maybe to have one to two TCF of producible gas. Thank you.
Thank you. The other issue was on the auditor's report, whether we have addressed those issues which the Auditor General raised, especially in terms of issues which matters of emphasis. The CFO will handle that, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. As a result of the fact that people don't actually have copies of our annual report, I can confirm, as the Chairperson mentioned, that we do have, the opinion was that the financial statements present in all material respects the financial position of the agency. There were two issues that were raised as a matter of emphasis, which were mentioned in the auditor's report. The one was there was a significant change to the financial statements as a result between when we submitted them in May and when we actually finalized them in July. I did mention earlier that we identified a significant error in the income calculation that was provided to us by Petro SA. There was a conversion factor that they changed the company that they were using to do the assessment of the volumes of gas that was flowing through the Mosgas plant. And in that conversion, there was a change in the way the reports were presented, and when Petro SA took the information from the reports and submitted it through to us at the agency, it wasn't converted correctly, and it resulted in a 50 million rand increase in the income received by the agency for the year. So that's significant. That gave a result to a matter of emphasis on the fact that we had submitted financial statements at the 31st of May that were not published ready, and there was an issue that talked about the accounting authority submitted financial statements for auditing that were not prepared in all material respects in accordance with the generally accepted accounting practice, and that gave rise to a finding on leadership and performance management. We believe that that particular issue was a once-off issue, and we are now, it has been corrected, it was a human error calculation issue, so we do believe that that particular error has been calculated. The other issue was a correction in the way there was no actual change to numbers other than the actual presentation of prior year numbers in the financial statements. In the note to the income statement, one is required to disclose one's personnel costs. And we had been disclosing only certain of those personnel costs. It hadn't included our training and development costs and those other personnel-related costs. It was only the direct personnel costs that we had been disclosing previously. We identified that in terms of proper accounting practice, we should have been disclosing, in addition to the actual personnel, direct personnel costs, also the personnel-related costs. So we made a prior year restatement of our operating profit note, and that was the other finding on the matter. So in both instances, it was a correction of a situation, and we believe that we now have a better understanding of it, and there is no further need to make any adjustment. We have indeed corrected those particular issues. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay, thank you, Pastor. If there are any follow-up questions, we'll allow that. But just also to explore some of these matters at a more general level. You're foreseeing that, and you're saying it in your responses, that you are not anticipating to receive any form of income. You are not supposed to receive any form of income from the operators, but then fiscus must come into place in terms of the MPRDA, fair and good. But the question that we want to pose on you, like we are doing with the Department of Mineral Resources, the problem we have is that our natural resources seem to be given away more freer and to the expense of the country. Apart from royalties that are being paid, your license regime seems seems to indicate that your license fees, I don't know how much are they, 50 rand, 500 rand, something of that nature, which indicates to us that it's a giveaway, and the country does not necessarily benefit from these natural resources, including the gas, and possibly now into the future, the oil. We wouldn't like to see a situation that we're seeing in the mineral sector situation, where the license fees are so low that they are meaningless. We'd want a situation where you are able to then demonstrate to us that into the future you will be charging reasonably so that the country does benefit. But secondly to that, you don't seem to be indicating to us any conditionalities that are attached to the issuing of your licenses. For instance, issues when you were responding to questions related to the environment, that you didn't deal in depth whether you have possibilities of environmental degradation that might take place in the course of either exploration or the actual production when it comes to gas and oil. Any form of rehabilitation, because you're dealing with our marine resources. And indeed, if there is any disturbance in that kind of an environment, it has to be restored to what it was. Are there any possibilities, or do you don't see whether there is a need for those kind of conditionalities to be attached to your permits? I'm asking this, raising this question, being ignorant of whether you do have very strict conditions that apply with your licensing regime. But please explain to us, firstly, in terms of the benefits to the country when it comes to these natural resources, so that we don't lose out as we have done in the mineral resources. We have lost in the bigger part. It's only now that DMR is basically putting processes in place so that the country does benefit from those natural resources. We don't want to see a repetition of that when it comes to gas and oil resources that you are working on. And secondly, if you could take us through your licensing regime, whether there are conditionalities or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the introductory remarks made by my chairperson or NDG chairperson, he made mention of the fact of the comparison between oil and gas, our potential endowment as South Africa, and our potential and our endowment with regard to hard rock minerals. Yes, that has created a situation where we have had to try as much as possible. This is government policy to attract the operators. And in attracting them, yes, we do not have huge application costs. Even the data that we we sell to them is not sold for purposes of income generation per se. It's pegged so that it can attract investment into the country, because that's where the real profits will come from. So from the applications processes and the processing of applications, yes, there are no huge costs that we levy to the applicants, Chairperson. And this is also because the country itself, yes, we do have a national oil company, but the country is trying to get these companies to come in so that we can get the assistance of uncovering the real potential of the country. So yes, I agree that the we do not have huge cost, you know, license fees and so on. They are fairly intended just to attract responsible companies. And there are times when we veer from the open door licensing policy, which is still in terms of Section 73 of the Act, where we have seen a lot of interest, and we ourselves are confident of that particular acreage, of the potential and prospectivity of a particular area, we would then do a bidding, what is called a formal licensing round, so that we can attract the very best. So in those isolated cases, we will veer from the open door policy. So that is the background to the fees that we charge, Jefferson. And we, it's the costs involved in exploration and production. But having said that, all production licenses in the country must have our national oil company, or must have two things. They must have BEE as part of the ownership, apart from other black economic empowerment requirements that we have for procurement, for management training, for skills development, and so on. But the actual ownership must have BEE, and it must have our national or the state as a partner. So the state shall be a partner in all production rights. So that is part of the conditions. It's like talking about conditions. Yes, we have not gone at depth in the criteria and the conditions that we put for environmental management. But I certainly can confirm, Chairperson, that we've got very strict conditions that we put, including security that must be put down upfront before the license is granted, to ensure that even if the operator were to disappear in the middle of the operations, there is money and security upfront to rehabilitate where there has been degradation. And of course, we commit them before the license is granted to the environmental management plan that will ensure that there is remediation of the acreage. We are one of few countries in the world that actually require an environmental management plan upfront. There are countries where they will grant a license and then require an environmental management plan thereafter. But we don't do that. We do not grant. In fact, the environmental management plan, if it is not approved, that application cannot even continue to be processed because of the crucial role that environmental management plays in our licensing regime. Yes, we did not go into great detail on the work programs that we require on environmental management plan, but perhaps on another opportunity, where when we present to you on the detail that can be done.
I see there are other follow-ups. Honorable Khululu, Honorable Lorimer.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to make a follow-up on the low cost of the granting of licenses. I just wanted to check if we could benchmark ourselves with other countries such as Canada, Australia, and other countries that are we charging less or more when granting this license? What are our costs actually as compared to the other countries?
Thank you, Honorable Lorimer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have quite a lot of questions, and I missed a couple of crucial opinions, but it sounds like you've more or less answered the first one, which was about the adequacy of environmental legislation surrounding new processes, like, for example, fracking. Are you happy then that what is in the law will allow you to cover all contingencies there? The second opinion that I wanted was the likelihood of opposition to our continental shelf claim. Could you just give us an indication of whether you think that's going to be opposed, or what is happening on similar claims elsewhere? Thank you.
Okay, let me start with the first question on the comparison. Perhaps let me ask Ms. Van Averbeke. Can you take the On the comparison with other countries, but before I gave to Dave, I can just make two quick remarks. We do have a good package to attract investors, but each country will be unique in the sense that there are requirements that we have that other countries will not have. For example, we will have BEE that other countries will not have. So each package is a package. You know, it will have your BEE, it will have your environment, it will have a number of things. And it will also take into consideration your prospectivity in the country. Because even people inside the country, I don't know how many people in this room have got confidence in the endowment of South Africa, you know, with oil and gas. Now, if you are a Malaysia, you are in Angola, you are able to have stricter terms, and if you are in South Africa and perhaps, you know, a Botswana, you know, then you peg your attraction policy, because what you want at the end of the day is you want to attract that investment. And of course, this situation will change from time to time, because even countries like Malaysia would have moved from one attracting and promotion policy to another upon the discovery of the real potential. So upon the discovery of the real potential of South Africa and upon perhaps significant discoveries, you will find that there may be changes in our promotion policies, because now we are able to demand, you know, a bit more in a number of respects, even including, for example, the state stake, you know, within the production and exploration licenses. So how that package is pegged will differ from country to country. But I'd just like Dave and Siki to comment on the comparative status of South Africa with regard to other countries.
Jefferson, yes, we certainly have done a benchmarking exercise. And as our CEO has explained, different countries take different approaches. There can be the general approach that South Africa uses of low initial costs to attract investment, and then reliance on royalties once there's production to bring the state share into the state coffers and to be used for the country's benefit. Or there can be the approach where there are very, very high upfront costs and then not so much state participation as things go along. And that is the usual approach for countries that already have proven prospectivity and high production. Our benchmarking exercise that we did recently was a comparison with countries that are in a similar situation to ours, where there is not a perception of great prospectivity, and I would say we're more or less on a par with most of those, certainly with the countries that we looked at, which were other Southern African countries and a couple of European countries.
Okay, thank you again, Chairperson. With regard to the adequacy of current legislation, as asked by Honorable Lorimer, Chairperson, this is a matter that that is part of the task of the task team at the moment. So it's difficult to go to any depth in answering it, the adequacy of our legislation and regulatory regime. But I can comment nevertheless on the legislation that we do have. South Africa has got strong legislation. We've got, you know, close over five pieces of legislation that would impact shale gas exploration, from water waste management, from the Water Act to the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, NEMA, management of nuclear waste. You know, there are all types of legislation that we do have. I think what we might very well need to do is to strengthen the perhaps the regulations in line, because hydraulic fracturing is a technique. You know, you can't change legislation every time technology develops. So we but you know, that is a matter that the task team is looking at. So I will not go very far with regard to that. And then possible opposition to our claim, With regard to the continental shelf claim, I'll ask Jenny to comment.
There are two processes in place to allow states to provide opposition to claims. The first one is when you submit your claim to the United Nations, you put on their website a summary which outlines the claim. This allows any state, does not have to be a neighboring state, to lodge their objections to the claim. And this can be on the basis of technical or legal grounds. So far, on the two claims that we have lodged, we have received no objections. In both cases, there are minor overlaps with our neighboring states, with Mozambique and with Namibia. And both of those, we have notes of avowal in place that agree that the submissions can go ahead as long as they're without prejudice to any future delimitation of maritime boundary between the states. So the submission is in place purely for the continental shelf and that outer, final outer limit. It doesn't talk about where the boundary will exist between the two national, between the two coastal states. That will be determined by a legal process and has nothing to do with the United Nations. So that is the understanding. With the addendum, which is going to move up the Discovery Ridge, there is a potential overlap with Madagascar. And the department, and because we have not already submitted a executive summary on, in this regard, we don't know whether there's an objection. However, what we, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation is currently in discussion with the equivalent authorities in Madagascar in order to come to the same agreement. And that's sort of the general agreement that coastal states have undertaken, unless there is a potential for national boundaries to be of a conflictual nature. We don't anticipate that in the Discovery Ridge with Madagascar. Both the overlapping area is very distant from both of the mainlands and is unlikely to be conflict there. What we would like is that we have agreement before we submit our executive summary so that this doesn't come as a shock to our neighbor. We would like for the discussions to take place in advance, and those are well underway and are in the hands of Durkan.
Chairperson, does that end?
Thank you very much indeed. You have responded to questions that we have asked you. As usual, this has been an interesting subject and it will remain such. We will not in this time wait until the end of the year when you are to present your annual report and your strategic plan. In the middle of the term, we will invite you back here. In particular, when you have clarified issues pertaining to the moratorium on the shale gas, so that you bring us up to stream, so that also we devote some time in understanding more of the work that you are doing, so that where you need our assistance, then we can then render such service, you know, willingly, after having accumulated enough knowledge on what you are busy doing, and you are very much important into the future plans of the country. That's why we will ask these probing questions, so that we understand where are we, and at what stage will then your efforts bear fruit for the benefit of the country. So with those few words, we thank you very much. And honorable members, both reports are before us. Let's adopt them. Any mover, any seconder?
I move for adoption of the report, Chairperson.
Honorable Bigani moves. Any seconder? Honorable Khululu does second. And that takes care of the situation. We thank you very much for your time. And honorable members, whilst Public Enterprises is connecting, we will have to take tea. Tea is ready outside, and then we'll listen straight on to public enterprise. Let's take 5-10 minutes for the tea break. Thank you very much.